recording. And now I'll share the agenda again. Okay. So we're recording and it's 7:04. So I'll just make a note of that for the minutes. All right, let's get rolling. I don't think, other than Jim, unless I'm missing somebody, I don't think we have any members of the public. And Jim, you're not even really here as a member of the public. But at any rate, regardless, does anybody have any public comment? All righty. And agenda, pretty straightforward. We're just going to keep going with our highway capital planning. Of course, we have Jim here tonight. And then I'm going to share the minutes. I just drafted them up. I know they're late, but they're not too extensive. So let me just share them and please chime in if I missed anything as soon as I bring it up here. Minutes from last meeting. All I really did was try to annotate what we talked about in terms of things we wanted to go and investigate more. So the extended warranty, maintenance cost, get better information for first and second year depreciation, which I think we got. Anything on service contracts. You said Celdrix. Did I spell that right?
I think you did. Yep.
Is that a company or a person?
It's a person. His first name is Tim, if you want to add that.
Oh, okay. All right. Tim Celdrick. So I'll correct that. And then Kevin, Hunter, you were going to talk to Kevin McNamara. And then I had a couple of action items. And then of course we said we would invite Jim to tonight's meeting. Did I miss anything, any glaring issues here in the minutes?
Looks good to me.
Okay. If you think of any after tonight, by all means, shoot me a note. I'll fix them. And I'll stop sharing here. All right. So why don't we go ahead and dive in? And we've got Jim here, so why don't we make best use of his time? And I personally don't have any. I mean, I think the conversation will flow, but I don't know if anybody has specific questions for Jim right off the bat, or if we just want to give Jim the floor and let him talk about his thoughts. However, you guys want to approach it.
I would let him. Go for it. See what happens.
Okay. All right, Jim. Well, the floor is yours. We're all ears.
All right. So I mean, what I guess this is kind of new to me doing something like this anyways. But so from what I can make of it, I mean, so I had the John Deere guy come up, which would he looked at the loader and the grader.
Yep.
You know, condition wise and stuff like that. And he did say that the grader, number one, he said was clean and well taken care of. He liked the looks of that. He did say that the hours for the trade on the grader are between 6 to 12,000 hours, with the average of about 9,000 usually.
I would just pause for a moment just to point out back to our last meeting. I'd have to go back into our notes, but Jim, just so you know, our current replacement schedule on the grader is in fact 9,000 hours.
It is not. See, I like I said, this is all kind of new to me, but
yeah,
go ahead, Scott.
Sorry. Well, we can fill in the blanks for you as we go, but I just want to mention that because in our planning back 4 years ago, we had come up with a number based on some research we did that 9,000 for the grader was the right number.
Okay, good. So, and then the other thing that he did say was that the John Deere, the grader parts for when you buy a piece of equipment like that, they're not, them parts aren't guaranteed to be in stock after that. They only have to hang on to them for, like, I think he said 20 years.
Right.
The stock parts in that. And with this grader being that its age that it is now, you know, parts could become harder to get for the grader. And he also said, like, you know, there's not a real big sale form around here with them graders. So with that being said, I think they go overseas, somewhere's over there mainly. And with the way our grader's set up right now, has the lever controls and everything on it, they still like that over there because it's easy for them to deal with and work on. So that was one thing he did say about the, you know, the situation with that grader too.
Yeah.
I do know that, you know, some of the stuff like that, I know I haven't gone and gotten prices on yet, but like the grader, if we keep the grader, you know, it's going to need a new mower board on it for sure. And I don't even dare to say what a number would be for that, you know, until I did more research on that, because it's bent on one end and it's been bent right along. And
right.
I would recommend that we should. And it's got a shutter in it. So when I say a shutter in it, so sometimes when you go and you go to articulate it, it kind of pops a little bit. And he said that it seems to him like that kingpin or the main carrying pin and everything on the grader is getting worn down. So they might have to look into evaluate and see, you know, what that would cost to repin it and rebush it. And hopefully they wouldn't have to line more if it's not worn that bad, you know.
Right.
But he said that's what you're going to start coming up with and getting the advantage of the grader.
Right. I got a question for you, Jim. Whether it's Woodstock or other towns, do you know anything about, I haven't gotten, just as background, I reached out to Woodstock and they haven't provided me the information yet, but they said they would. And Woodstock leases, has got a lease purchase arrangement with someone.
Yep.
For their trucks and their grader. Do you know anything about that?
I can't really tell you. I don't know a lot about that other than I do know that they just bought a new loader. I say bought new. They just leased a new loader through John Deere. I do know that. I haven't touched on any of that really with them much. But I've always thought that a lease program would be a pretty good way to go. That's always, you know, I don't know. I haven't done all my homework on that or whatever, but I know years ago they had talked about it as well. And it just seemed like it was a fixed number every year.
But right. Yep. There's predictability about it.
I think Jim, if I recall, what he said was that they lease it. The reason that they lease it is, the reason the leases are out there on this heavy equipment is because most companies that are in business use a lease so that they can write off the equipment in 5 or 7 years, which is the length of the lease, and they can, rather than depreciate it over the period of time. The town of Plumford is a municipality, so we don't pay taxes, so that is not a plus. But the comment was made that Woodstock does lease some of the heavy equipment, but that does not mean that they get rid of it after the 5 or 7 years, that they get it for a dollar, but they keep it longer than that.
John, do you, I'm sure I'll find out when I get the information back. I did get a response from Woodstock today, but
yeah.
Do you happen to know, John, more how long they're keeping, if they're keeping it and how long they're keeping it?
I don't know. The comment was made that they don't trade the grader after 7 years. So I don't know what the length of time is, but there was some discussion that John Peters made at one of the select board meetings, and that was that they lease it and then they get a new one. And if they lease it, they just don't get a new one. They own that one. So then they have to trade that. So if they do trade it at the end of 7 or 5 years, I would be surprised. But I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. All right. So we'll run that down.
Yep.
More when we get the information.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Sorry to kind of segue, Jimmy. You were talking loader and grader. Was there more on the loader?
Oh yeah. So the loader, right now, he had said, you know, usually I think it was, I think he said 4,000 hours usually is the real sweet spot to get rid of a loader. And a loader is one of them things too, like he said, that you can get more for your trade and everything on, because a lot of contractors want that loader. You know what I mean? He did say that sometimes, I guess the biggest thing with the loaders is, you know, that the way people look at them is they're rusted up real bad and stuff like that. And he actually commented on ours that it looked like it was in very good shape because it's not rusted up and whatnot. But he pretty much said that, you know, the trade value on them is that I think he said it was like 4,000 hours is when you would look for it. And right now he said ours is at that sweet spot.
It's at 4,000 right now, Jim?
Yeah, it's somewhere right around that. Yeah, okay. It's right around there, Scott. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yeah. But he did say that right now would be, I mean, the most you're going to get for it would be right now. But other than that, I mean, the loader he thought was in really good shape.
Do you think it would go? So right now, the way it's programmed out was, and this was based on 6,000 hours at the time.
Yeah.
We programmed it out to FY25, thinking we would get 6,000 hours out of that. Yeah. Do you think that the loader, the condition it's in, is better traded in now, or maybe not like right now, but in the next year or two, and getting it closer to that 4,000 mark? Or do you think it's in good enough condition that it could go, like, basically we're talking another 5 years?
Honestly, I mean, I think, I mean, I don't know how to say it, but I'm comfortable with, I mean, if I had to be comfortable with it, I'd say another year or two.
Another year or two. Okay.
I wouldn't go, you know what I mean? Especially with the value of it being what it's worth right now.
Yeah.
You know, and over time, we're going to have to start thinking about putting some new tires on it. So, I mean, right. We're going to have some investments that are going to go back into that as well, you know. So,
right.
I would think, you know, I mean, I would be comfortable maybe a year or two, but I wouldn't go much more than that. But that's me.
Okay. That's good feedback. So that's something for us to plot into our spreadsheet then. Jim, I don't know if maybe now is a good time. Well, is there more on heavy equipment we should talk about, or should we segue into dump truck?
I do know that I did talk to him a little bit about the grader replacement, and, you know, on the values of what we would get if we replaced the grader, you know, with a new one. And the grader we'd get would pretty much be the same size if it was to be replaced, but the horsepower would be quite a bit more on it.
Yeah.
And the other thing that he said that they could do with it would be an option was out on the blade, so it didn't get bent on the ledge and stuff anymore. They could put like a breakaway on the end of that, so it's like pressure relief on the end of it that a lot of places are doing now.
Yeah.
It would come through with with a setting on it so that you could set it. So if you wanted a 2% crown, you set that blade down and it goes right along and gives you the crown that you want. And the efficiency in getting your roads done quicker, I mean, I shouldn't say quicker, but you'll be able to get more roads done in a day with it, he said, would be substantial because it would be more horsepower and the way that it would crown itself out and the ease of it and the way the levers and everything would be on it now would be real user-friendly and kind of soft motion. And he said that there are a lot of advantages on that.
Yeah. Did he give you any numbers on if it were traded in the next year or two?
No, he did not give me any numbers.
Okay. We might want to try and get some numbers from him, whether it's us or you, just so we have an idea of what we're looking at. And also the late loader too. But you said he's a John Deere guy, right?
Correct.
Yep. So he's just going to give us John Deere's perspective. We might get a different number from some, you know, like from Caterpillar or something.
Yeah, I do know like Caterpillar right now. They've had a lot of issues with their electronic joysticks and stuff. So they're going back to the old school on the way that this grader's set up now.
Okay.
Jim, do you want to comment on the excavator? He gave a little break.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the excavator, he looked at the excavator and he said, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, John, but he said pretty much keep running it. He can sell them things all day long. So he said that if he had to put anything in an order on to where to replace anything, that would be down to the bottom of that line for sure. And I think he said, didn't he say something like 11,000 hours down or something like that?
I had down 9, but not 9,000, but he might've said 11, but my note said 9.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so he said.
Yeah, no, you're right. He did say 9. Now that you said that, yep, he did.
So he said the sweet spot on the excavator is 9,000.
Yep.
Okay, and I'm going to take a wild swing here, and say, do you know the current hours right off the top of your head, Jim?
There's only like 2,300 on it.
I was going to say because back in 2016 we had 16. Almost 1,700 on it, so I wouldn't think we would have gotten that many more.
Yeah, no, it was about 2,300, Scott.
So we got a ways to go.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's good information. Thank you.
Jim, I didn't hear I don't know if you said so, how many current hours are on the grader? I heard the 9,000 is the sweet spot or our target.
Correct. There's, if memory serves me right, I think I didn't bring my list with me, but I think there is 6,333 hours.
Thank you.
Don't quote me on that. I can get a more of a solid number, but somewhere is around there.
That actually, I bet that's got to be pretty close, Jim, because it's been a while. It's been a couple of years since we did it, but the last time I think we had almost 4,800.
Yeah.
And I know you've clocked a lot of hours lately on it. So that would make sense if it's right around that 6,000.
It's somewhere right around that 6,300. I know that they just had to come in and do another 500 hour service.
So you don't think we would actually, So if I'm hearing you right, did you say 9,000 is the sweet spot for the grader?
Well, I guess the biggest thing that he said about it was, about the average is 9,000, but the thing we got going against us now is the year of it.
Okay.
And I don't know, I mean, that. It was. I talked to him the other day because it's starting to have oil consumption issues, motor oil, and so I don't know yet. I gotta talk to the board about it all. But they might have to come in and do some pressure tests on it and stuff, because I think it's getting a lot of blow by right now.
Okay. All right.
He also mentioned one other thing, that he doesn't know if that grader's ever had brakes or not. It probably hasn't, but he said that typically they have to pull the whole rear end apart, because those brakes are in oil. In the oil bath, you can't see the brake. You can't tell how bad it is worn. And so they're... I kind of got a feeling from when he was down there looking at the grader and comparing that to the loader, that he thought the grader might want to consider getting rid of that before you do the loader.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm. Yeah, it
might take a little bit more. Is that a fair statement, Jim?
Yeah, that's fair. Yep.
Okay. All right, that's all good information. Should we pivot to dump trucks for a bit?
Sure, if that's what everybody wants to do.
So I've got a couple of questions around the trucks, but I think first, it's maybe worth saying that, going back in time, and I got to refresh my memory here, but I think what we always said about the trucks is that, I'm trying to find it in our original plan. If we didn't say it originally, I think we said it in our more current revisions, and this is just good context, is that we said that we were looking actually at a 5 to 7 year range, and that if we could get 7 out of it, that would be ideal. And I think what's shaping up, and others can speak for themselves, but I think based upon what we've heard and the information we've gathered so far, things seem to be tilting in the direction of 5 years based upon what we're hearing for a multitude of reasons, whether it's, I think predominantly it's around trade-in value, that, you know, we're going to get better trade-ins and warranty coverage and so on. But my question for you, Jim, is more related to the trucks we have now. Actually, two questions. One is the trucks that we have now, knowing that the trucks we just bought are pretty different in fundamentally in design, what your expectations are around how much trouble you think, you know, we had a lot of trouble with the trucks we have now. Do you think we're gonna have less trouble, the fact that we're not running four-wheel drive, we're not going to have the front end issues? Like, is your expectation that we'll have more of the run-of-the-mill issues with the trucks rather than what we've had now with the current trucks?
I don't see a lot of the issues with these four-wheel drives. Like you said, it has been the front ends, you know, and no matter where you go or who you ask, everybody's having the same problem with them. So I don't see, there being all that many issues with them. You know, my only thing of it is that I do know that talking around, especially with the 10-wheelers, that everybody said that the trade-in on them is a lot more, because your local contractors and stuff really wanted trucks.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't foresee having major issues with them. You know, these front ends in these trucks, they're just horrid. I mean, town of Sharon. They've been back and forth with the same truck, had it back for 2 weeks, and the front end went again and take it right back. So, I mean, I think by getting away from them, I think we're going to see a lot of issues go away.
Okay. The other question I had for you is just to try and put things in some perspective. The two of the trucks that we're trading in with the exception of the Western Star, the two Freightliners, we're getting much better trade-in on them than we might expect from a normal loss of value over time. And I'd ask Dan. Dan's been really great coming back. Dan from Clark's has been really helpful with information, but I'm still waiting for him to answer, like, what's the reason why we're getting so much more for those two Freightliners in trade-in than we might expect otherwise, like 20 grand.
Number one of it is the comment's been made that those trucks, for what they've been asked to do and go through and whatnot, they look very good.
Okay.
That has been a comment that's been made. But the way them trucks are too, with the stainless skin that was on the bodies and stuff, I mean, it makes them trucks look good. But if you look around them trucks real hard, put a strong eyeball on them, you can see through the floors of them trucks, you know, and the bodies and stuff like that. I mean, the appearance is what sells those trucks, to be honest with you. I really feel that way. And then they got lucky, too. Personally, I feel that they already had a contractor looking for something of that nature, because I know both of these trucks are going to the same guy out in New York.
Is another town picking them up, Jim, or you said a contractor?
Got a contractor out there, yep, that has, like, I don't know, he named off the name of the place. It's all, like, their own little community. And I don't know, but so these trucks, that's where these four-wheel drives are going. Both of them are going to the same place. But he made the comment right square up that that's the thing with these is this guy where they're going, he's got, I don't know how many other ones that are there. So he has parts trucks and he has this and he has that. So they fit him really well. But around anybody else, I mean, they're going to become a time when four-wheel drives aren't going to, they're going to be obsolete around the towns because everyone's getting away from it.
Thanks, Jim. That's really helpful. I think that helps explain why we're getting more for those. What's another question? I had another question on trucks, on the dump trucks, but I can't remember. I don't know. It may come back to me, but anybody else got other questions? I just remembered. I mean, this may be relatively minor in the grand scheme of things, but it looks like we're getting ready to buy some Clearlane formulated salt.
Correct.
So that should, in theory, help with the conditions of the trucks when we're getting ready to train them in, since it cuts down. It's got a pretty significant reduction in corrosion, I read.
It does. And, you know, I can tell you, and out of all honesty, I've seen changes at that garage since I started. And I've seen not a lot of rust in there when I first got there. And we were using straight salt, and then there was another one that we started using that had molasses in it that was supposed to be faster activated at that time. Then we went and changed from forced air heat to radiant heat. Well, radiant heat, of course, naturally, at midnight, 1 o'clock, when you get done, you pull your truck in, and knowing that you're going to come back in a couple hours, so you just pull your truck in. You don't take the hose, it's caked with snow, it melts off. Then I see rust problems coming from that. Then we went back and we were using that straight salt at that time. And then we got done by using the straight salt and we switched over to using the clear lane. And I noticed a huge difference on these trucks. And then when I left, they went back to using straight salt again and these trucks started getting rusty. So there's some truth behind that. I think it's really wise.
Okay. So, I think I caught it now. You're talking about from not just since you've come back recently, but
right.
Even before.
And I've seen that, you know, trend on what different inclements do to it, you know, of that source. In this last bout here, I see that we went from, and when they weren't that bad when I left, but then what happened was they went to the straight salt. Of course, you got that more corrosion in the straight salt, so then the trucks got real rusted up even worse. So
yeah,
I'd be curious to see how these next batch of trucks go if we stay on the clear lane on how that shows at the other end.
I got a question for you, Jim. At the last Selectman's meeting when they were talking about the different salt, I was under the impression that the clear lane does not work when it gets really cold and therefore you need some regular salt if it's cold. Could you get by with just using the clear lane all year round in order to save on the rust?
Clear lane is the only thing that will work at 20 below.
Oh, that's okay. I had that reversed. Okay.
Now the white salt, yeah, the warmer it gets, then you could go into using the white salt on it. But with what the mixture is with that clear lane is lots of times is, so if you get, let's say you get one storm and it's a good storm, and then you get that one cleaned up and they're saying, well, you know, there's another storm coming. It could be just a little dust coming. Lots of times with that clear lane, from you treated it the time before, it will take care of that problem as well, that next little storm, as opposed to your rock salt, it will not do that.
So it sounds like your recommendation would be to use clear lane all the time. Is that
what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Thank you, Jim. That's helpful to know. Yep. Just to go back, I want to make sure I understand this correctly. On the forced, what are we doing now? Are we doing radiant heat or forced air?
Radiant. Yeah. So we have radiant. And see, before, I think what happened, Scott, was the heat, you know, all the vents were above the trucks.
Yeah.
So the bottoms of the trucks didn't really get that warm. Know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
So lots of times, you know, they didn't even hardly melt off by the time you pulled them in till the next morning you come back in. They weren't even hardly melted off. Now you find them, you go in there and they're all melted off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with it. And of course, you know, and now that heat is keeping that salt to activate, that, you know, you probably should have washed it off, but when you get in at midnight at night and when you're coming back in at 3 a.m, that's kind of a lot. You're thinking, I'm going home, going to bed, you know. And so, better practice on getting them washed off within them couple hours probably, but I have seen a huge difference in that.
So, it sounds like the trick is to minimize the, I mean, you can't predict the weather, of course. But is to try and minimize the number of times where we're getting that kind of exposure where the trucks are in there long enough that when they haven't been washed off.
Right.
That, I mean, it's sort of the, again, you know, with the best information you have is, you know, there's not much you can do if you know you're going back out 3 hours later.
That's right. But, you know, if you know you're not coming back in for a while, then yeah. You would hose it off, you know, you're going to have to wait for it to thaw itself out a little bit before you hose
right.
it off.
But right.
I've left them sitting right outside, shut the key right off and left them sitting outside before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coming back, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. That might be something we look into a little bit.
I just like to make a comment that I've never seen that garage look as nice as it does. It was neat, clean, well-made. Trucks look great. Grader, all the stuff looks good. Jimmy's doing a great job.
Thank you.
I think that reminds me, I should come in. I haven't been down there in a while. I should come check things out.
It's starting to come together now. They're getting the outside of it painted. It's starting to look nice.
I got a random question for you. Not to go off topic too far, but since I'm thinking of it, this is more about the garage. We had, this was before you came back on, Jim, but when we looked at the building, one of the things we talked about is that there was a desire and even a need for like an organized break area.
I would love it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to know is how you would feel about doing something like that.
I would love it. Yeah. Because sometimes it's very hard when I'm on the phone trying to do something and then the other guys want to come in and sit down. You know, even if I'm in there meeting somebody and somebody wants to come in and get a bite to eat or come in and do whatever, you know, it's hard at times, very hard at times.
Okay. I'm sorry. I just keep thinking of random stuff that comes back into my memory. One other thing that just popped into my mind from our last visit to the garage when we did the capital plan, the generator, as I recall, it, at least at that time, was not mobile.
Mobilizing.
Like it wasn't on. I might have my memory might not be serving me here, but I feel like it wasn't on wheels, or you all didn't have a way to really maneuver that generator.
Correct. It's not. Yep.
So is that still an issue?
As far as I know, yep.
Okay.
But I mean, it's not that.
Yeah, it's not a bit. It's not a big deal, but.
No, but it'd be nice to be able to, you know. So, you know, at nighttime when you do lose your power, it's pretty easy to drag it around on top of those, I guess.
Right.
Over time, that'd be a good thing to have down there as a on-spot generator. So when you do lose your power, you don't have to jerry-rig everything up to get diesel fuel and everything else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. That's exactly right. We had talked about getting a panel installed.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Anything else that comes to mind?
I can't think of anything, but.
I think this is Neil. I think one of the things that with the big three pieces of equipment, we need some trade-in values or percent depreciation or something for something like maybe, I don't know, 4, 6, and 8,000 hours. We did that. We got that from Dan and for the trucks at every year up to 7 years. And I think we need a range what the trade-in value on these equipments would be. And we need a range of the hours in there because we're trading them by hours, not years, if I catch right.
Yeah, that would be good if we could acquire that information. Cool. All right. Anybody else have questions for Jim while we've got him? All right. Well, I guess, Jim, you're certainly welcome to hang out with us if you want to.
Yeah, I might do it for a little bit, if you don't mind.
No, not at all. Not at all. So I guess why don't we just go back to what we talked about last week and see, Hunter, I know you got some information from Kevin. John, you might, I don't know if you touched base with Tim or Eric, but maybe we should dive into what you all learned.
I'll be quick on mine because I didn't get a chance to call. I played telephone tag with Eric, and I didn't get a chance. I didn't call Tim, so I will get those for the next meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, and I did catch Kevin, and he's got 310 wheelers, but you know he's running them totally differently than we are, mostly in the summertime for road and site work. So, you know, they're not as exposed to salt, you know, and that kind of thing. They don't have, and he doesn't run plows on them most of the time. So, but he is on the, they call it the purchasing committee, I guess, over there in Plainfield. And so he was just telling me that Plainfield has been running their trucks for 10-year intervals. And they're deciding now that they're going to back it down to 5 and stay within the warranty period. And he said that the thing that was driving that the most was being able to keep a warranty on it while they owned it. And also he was saying that they found that once those trucks go beyond 7 years, everything just starts falling apart on them. That's when they get into the really high maintenance needs. I mean, I don't think we've ever considered going over 7 years. So they were at 10, but that was about all I could get from them was that the Plainfield's looking at 5 as the best option. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, it's all kind of anecdotal, but I think what we're seeing out there more and more, I have seen some municipalities going out to 10, but it does seem like there's an inclination to kind of pull back to a shorter replacement cycle for a lot of the reasons we've been talking about. So that seems to be where things are gelling.
Scott, I put a quick spreadsheet together based on what you and John Rigetson did. I'm wondering, am I able to share my screen? Would be worth it. Could you make me a co-host?
Let me do that. Hang on. I'm going to make you the host for just a second. So you're the host now. You should be able to share your screen.
All right. Yeah, I just want to put this up here because I was just playing around with these numbers and see if I can find that. Hold on a sec here. Let's see if,
while you're looking, can I ask Neil a question or Jim a question and a comment on Neil's comment? Jim?
Yeah.
What would you say in average hours per year you'd be looking at for the grader, excavator, and payloader?
Ooh, well, I know the grader, you're going to be right around between 400 and 500.
Okay. That was a number I had too, but I didn't have a number for the excavator.
Yeah, the excavator is one of them things. I mean, when we had it back in Storm Irene, a lot of hours got put on it, but it's kind of, I wouldn't say nothing more than probably 300, you know?
Yeah, I guess based upon that answer, maybe Neil's got a good point based on hours. But we may want to also put in 9,000 hours or 20 years. If you figure the loader, if you figure the grader puts on 400 a year, so in 20 years, that would be 8,000 hours. So you could say 8,000 hours or 20 years. If you take the excavator, which they said was good till 9,000 hours, and if you put on 300 a year, in 20 years, you're only talking about 6,000 hours. So there's a certain point after 20 years that hydraulic hoses start to dry, get brittle. This maybe, I don't know, just a thought for your, Neil, that put a maximum number of years possibly, I don't know.
Sounds pretty reasonable. I mean, you've got to be flexible on this thing. You can't just...
Well, the way I've always thought about this is not necessarily from the perspective of years, but I think, and Jim, maybe I'd be interested to hear what you say about this. The way we talked about this, you know, 4 years ago when we started the Capital Planning Committee, is that we would always rely on the road foreman's report on the condition of the equipment. That if Jim, for instance, said, you know what, even though we planned on X number of hours for the loader, for instance, he would provide us with a report from his perspective to say, but you know, the hoses are going, or we're going to have trouble getting parts, or we're going to need new tires, or et cetera, that based upon the report from the road foreman on the condition of the vehicle and any challenges, that could accelerate the replacement of a piece of equipment. So it's not so much based on years as much as it is the on the ground, boots on the ground assessment of the road foreman to say what kind of shape it's in and what the road foreman's opinion is on it, and that we would always balance our spreadsheet cycle with that kind of firsthand knowledge. That was my, and to me, that's what makes sense, is that's where the play in the joints are, is having that information from Jim to say, just like we're doing now, to have that firsthand information to help us inform when the right time is to actually replace a piece of equipment.
Well, to me, it sounds like there's three sets of there's the hours, and then we could set a limit in years, as John's suggesting, so that, you know, even if we don't reach the hours mark, but it's 20 years old, you know, it's time to get rid of it. And then that would, both of those things would be overridden by the road foreman's report. If he says, we're not going to make it to 9,000 hours. We're not going to make it to 20,000 years. Stuff's falling apart. This one's a lemon, whatever, you know, that would influence our hours and years criteria. Right. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't put that above that. I think it's all three of them sort of kind of have to get paid.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that makes sense, is to have that, just the way you're describing it, Hunter, is that have that kind of three-pronged approach where it's hours, years, or firsthand condition report of the front form.
One of the things, you really can't take a chance on the thing breaking down. It's used all year round. Every time you get an event where you need hard pack to plug up a hole or a ditch that's blown out or something, there goes the loader. Every time a tree goes down, you run the loader out there, get that out of the road. And in the wintertime, if the loader goes down, you don't load sand and salt. And so you can't stretch the loader out beyond what its reliability is, that's for sure. If you have three trucks and one goes down, then it just takes a little while more for you to get around and get all the roads done, but you eventually get it done with two trucks. You're not going to get any sand or salt loaded if you don't have a loader.
Yeah, good point.
Well, that, but not only that, but with that loader, I mean, you got to stop and think on the hours that are on it. I think there's right around 4,000 hours or so on it. And, you know, that is a 2012. And it's already got the 4,000 hours on it, as opposed to the grader. I mean, the grader is a lot older than that, in, you know, in the hours that are on that. So that tells me, I mean, yeah, you're exactly right, that the loader goes a lot more than that grader does.
Yeah.
The other thing is that from a capital committee that we're on, we may be trying to get into the maintenance thing a little bit more than we have to. If you the select board is the one that's going to be talking to Jimmy on a biweekly basis, and when something comes up that's a bad situation, that it may move the trade in a little bit closer to what we projected. So it's hard to look out the front mirror. Maintenance stuff is more of a rear mirror
thing. I agree with you, John. I mean, I think what we're doing tonight with Jim, we should do as a regular practice, but just as you're saying, things could change during the course of a year. You know, something significant could happen with a piece of equipment that maybe alters the plan.
I give you an example just within the last two or three days. When I was down at the town garage and talking to the salesman about the stuff, I had a pretty good feeling that maybe that engine that's in the old grader is pretty nice because it doesn't have DEF. It's true, it doesn't have as much horsepower as a new one, so that's a knock. But now after listening to Jimmy today about possibly over burning too much oil, and that throws a whole nother light it just in two or three days that surfaced. So it's kind of a
our role, as I see it, is as best as possible to prevent wild swings in planning, but there's always going to be unforeseeable situations that occur that alters the plan. That's kind of the nature of planning. But our job is to, again, as I see it, is to establish consistency in planning. But just as I think what we're talking about now, is it is up to the select board, it is up to those ultimate decision makers to take the information that's coming in as we go and decide whether or not to stick with the plan or alter the plan. But at least we are offering a consistent plan.
But that from what you just said, Scott, I agree with that. But wouldn't you also say that maybe we should be on the conservative side and plan conservatively to have reliable equipment? And then if the select board decides they want to stretch it out based upon maintenance record, they can do that. But we should plan to have the sources of funds available on a conservative basis.
Well, so funds is a different topic.
Well, right? that's what our job is at the end of the day.
Well, part of our job is the funding part, but the schedule, you know, the planning replacement cycle part. I guess my viewpoint is, having been involved in this committee, and John, you and Hunter, the three of us have been involved from the beginning, is we haven't, in my view, taken a liberal approach at all. At worst, we've taken kind of a midpoint approach to everything. In other words, we haven't talked about stretching out trucks to 10 years. And all of our current planning replacement cycles are based upon, just as Jimmy talked about before, with the grader, our replacement hours was 9,000, which is the middle point. So we're not, we certainly could be conservative, but we're not on the other end of the spectrum either. We could, for instance, with the grader, say, nope, it's not 9,000, it's actually 6,000. That's our target. But that certainly can be something we choose to put into the plan. I'm just pointing out that up to now, we have really kind of taken the middle ground. And I personally, because it's my personal nature, to take the middle ground. That's kind of where I land on these things, is not super conservative, but not super liberal either. Let's just kind of take the middle ground on these things. And I think for the most part, that's the approach we've taken so far.
I think we're also basing our decisions on, you know, what we're finding for best practices elsewhere and industry standards and all that stuff. So, I mean, we're doing the research. So I think, I mean, I feel good about the time frames and durations we're coming up with.
Did you find your spreadsheet?
If I can, I'll do a quick screen share here and just take a look at this. I just updated my system software today and it's doing crazy things. Let's see.
You can email it to me if you want and I can share it.
Here we go. Let me try this. Okay. Okay. So let me just walk through kind of the thinking on this. I'm not quite sure that I've got this totally right. So just bear with me here, but it took the trade-in, the depreciation values that we got for 7 years, you know, and that the difference in that is it goes through 7 years. And what that translates to, and this, you know, is I just used a round number of 190 for the purchase price of the truck. So these numbers are slightly different than what John had on a spreadsheet, but, you know, they're more or less the same. And then I tried to look at how this would play out over a 3 year, you know, purchasing every 3 years with a trade-in, every 5 years, and every 7 years. So I looked at, if you start with a purchase of $190,000 truck and you go 3 years, so the end of the third year, you trade it in, and so you use that trade-in value, you get 102,956 in trade-in value. You're paying $87,000 for a new truck in 3 years. You go another 3 years, same thing. I mean, I'm not factoring in appreciation. I'm just keeping this flat lined. You pay another $87,000 3 years. You pay another $87,000. And then I just looked at year 10 because I tried to just run these out to 10 years. So I thought if you traded it in after that first year to just get 10 years out of it, you know, you'd be paying $47,500. And then I did the same thing with 5 years. So you purchase a truck for 190. After 5 years, you trade it in and you get $65,000 trade-in value. So you're paying $124,108 for a new truck. You do that again 5 years later. So after 10 years, you know, you've gotten two trucks, or you've gotten three and a third. And then after 7 years, you trade it in. You've got $42,000 in change trade-in value, so you're paying $147,000. And then at 10 years, you just buy another new truck, and you're at 3 or 2 years, whatever. So you are paying $68,000 for the truck. So then I just totaled those up across the board for 10 years, if you're on these three different cycles. And here's what I came up with. And so it's interesting. The most economical number is the 7 year. But it's not, you know, this is taken across 10 years. So there's only about a $30,000 difference between the 5 year and the 7 year purchase price over 10 years. And considering that you're maintaining the warranty in this scenario over 5 years, compared to this where you're either having to purchase extra or not at all. You know, it just seemed interesting. I don't know if that analysis makes sense to people, if it seems like the right way to look at this, but to me, it says, you know, that we probably aren't that bad off going with 5 years and sticking with the warranty. And it's not really costing us that much more to do that than going 7 years.
Right.
And it turns out that the 3-year option costs significantly more because we're just buying more trucks. Even though we're getting a much better trade-in value, we're just buying more trucks.
Yeah. I'm glad you did this, Hunter, because I was actually, I didn't have time, but I was trying to think about putting something similar to this together. And this is really good. This is very helpful. And I think this kind of gets us to the next step and looking at total acquisition cost. And I think that lays it out in black and white pretty well. And, you know, we can figure out that difference between, and I think it's a good model. It seems appropriate. And, you know, that $32,000 difference, you could probably figure out different ways to account for that. But I think you're right. It in the end, there's not a huge difference between those two.
Right. I mean, the difference between 3 and 7, and again, this is not a real sophisticated analysis because it's not dealing with appreciation and all that stuff. Acceleration of cost over time, but you know, this just, if you're just looking at it very simplistically, you know, it's you know, 100,000, it's like almost what, 25% more than the 7-year period. So yeah, and I don't know what an extended warranty costs,
right?
But
I know, I went back and looked at the Clark's paperwork and they do actually offer a 6-year warranty. I noticed, maybe even a 7, but I do think after you get into that more extended warranty, we'd have to go back and look at the paperwork, but, it may have some, it's certainly not bumper to bumper, when you get into that, but, I think what this tells us is, and this goes back to the comment I was saying earlier, is it may not have been in our original plan, but our more recent capital plans have actually pegged a range rather than a specific number. And I recall, and I'm pretty sure this is written into our update, that the way we positioned it in the more recent capital plan updates is that the sweet spot is between 5 and 7 years, and that it would be up to the select board's discretion as to when in that time period a truck should be replaced. The select board could say, no, we're doing it at 5, end of story, that's when we're doing it, or we want to try and stretch it out another year or two. But as John Moore said, rightfully so, that is where the select board comes in, is that they're the ones who ultimately decide when the piece of equipment should get replaced.
Right.
So I think what these numbers say to me is the sweet spot really is 5 to 7. It's somewhere in that range.
Well, I did the same analysis, only I ran it out for 15 years so that you could compare a 3-year trade to a 5-year trade and a 7-year trade. And the answer is the same. The relative position of that is 3 years is the most expensive and 5 years is somewhere in between 3 and 7. And that's very good information that we didn't have before. I'd never seen it before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, I mean, this shows that the 5 year isn't, I mean, it's in between, but it's closer to 7 years. You know, it's not, it's less than halfway to the 3-year point. You know what I'm saying? It's a little more favorable than just going halfway between them. But
Well, yeah. The other thing that you have to balance on that is that after you get to 5 years, you begin to pick up maintenance costs. Now, I know that the maintenance costs we have on the four-wheel drive trucks is not going to be comparable to the two-wheel drives that we have now, but I think probably Jimmy could tell you that you can expect some maintenance issues in years 6 and 7 that might very well eat up any advantage you have of by these numbers, just looking at these numbers.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what Jimmy has to say about that, because I know I've heard that after 7 years, you know, it gets really tough, but I'm wondering how it is after 5.
When you say, like, after 5 on the maintenance end of it and whatnot, the only thing I know of that with what we do with the trucks, and, of course, we're talking trucks and we're talking bodies, but I know usually right around the 5th year, you're looking to put, you know, the biggest thing you got to do is you're going to put a bed chain in that, which is going to be in the body, which that's going to be somewhere right around, you know, I don't know, probably 1,100, 1,200 bucks. So, I mean, you'll be doing that. And then once you get up into that, you're going to have to probably do, I would say, I mean, the other thing we have to remember with these other trucks too is if we're going to warranty them for the 5 years and we decide, well, we're going to hang on them for a couple more years after that, we have to remember that these, I call them the tier fours with the emissions on them and whatnot, no matter how you look at it, them porcelains that go in there for the emissions and whatnot, usually at about that time, they need a cleaning, they need, you know, it needs to be refreshed up. And that's what some of the issues is with these ones here is keep spitting these lights up now in these codes. And I think a lot of these, they need new porcelains in them. Well, when you got to step up, put a new porcelain in them, you're about $3,000, $3,500 right there to put that new porcelain. So that year 5, I think there's a lot more added maintenance to the emissions engine of these trucks once you hit to that year 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I'm just going to offer my perspective on this stuff. I don't know how others feel. Is the other thing that, you know, none of us have a crystal ball, and I just want to bring the conversation back to things we have talked about in the past. And it's, I think this is less relevant for dump trucks because I think we're all in agreement that no matter how this shakes out, the most important thing when it comes to dump trucks is that consistent reliability so that we don't have substantial downtime with those dump trucks, especially in the winter. And I think we're pretty much all in agreement on that. But the piece of this that I often think about, and again, it's maybe less relevant for the dump trucks, but we don't know how things are going to change, you know, the economy. You know, right now things aren't super bad, but we don't know down the road whether a select board of the future is going to have to weigh other things, you know, like what's going on in the economy, what's going on with tax revenue, what's going on with maybe other expenditures in the budget, or what things are changing. Like one of the things that we talked about several years ago when we first started Capital Planning Committee is that we don't know the shape of municipal government in the future. That I remember conversations about maybe towns will start sharing and buying resources together rather than buying their own equipment. And I think that maybe more importantly for the bigger pieces of equipment, less so for the dump trucks, is leaving a little bit of flex in the purchasing decisions. And again, this is the select board, not us. Having that flex in there to say, you know, you guys ultimately decide based upon the conditions what the best timing is. And it could be that while, as we're talking about it in a bit of a bubble here, 5 years may always make sense, but there could be situations in the future where the select board might say, you know what, five is, but we're going to stretch it out another year or maybe another 2 years. And I think it's wise. That's why I say when it comes to the dump trucks, it is perhaps wiser for us to position it as a range than a single number. And then let the select board decide where in that range, or to ignore the range completely, to time the purchase. But again, for us, in the spirit of consistency of planning, we're taking all these factors we're talking about and saying, this is what we think is the best methodology. I personally think Hunter phrased it as, you know, three different prongs, which I think are right. There, well, you've got either for the dump trucks, you got number of years and warranty, and then we've got conditions on the ground, like what's the condition of the truck today, and then you just leave it up to the select board to ultimately decide when the truck purchase will happen.
You know, Scott, I think from a practicality standpoint, because, I mean, in my position, I've got a whole fleet of maintenance vehicles and buses and vans and probably a couple dozen vehicles that we deal with at school. And we have a spreadsheet that just has the anticipated service life of all those vehicles. And it's just, you know, whatever it is, 5 years, 7 years, depending. And so every year that one of those vehicles comes up for replacement, you know, we look at it and we say, yeah, this thing's in tough shape. It needs to be replaced, or maybe we can get a few more years out of it. But if it's in tough shape, then we go to the trustees, you know, with our capital budget and say, yeah, we need to replace these vehicles. And, you know, there have been more times than not where they've said, I don't think we can do it this year. You know, try and keep that thing running for another year or two. And then that's what you do. Then you just, you go back to your spreadsheet and you add a year to that. And, you know, I think John, you know, John mentioned, like, we should just, I don't know if a range really does anybody any good. I think you just set the limit, and then the select board is ultimately going to make the decision whether that happens or not. But, you know, I think we could just set the limit and let them make the decision based on the economy, on the condition of the vehicle, on the form of government, whatever it is. They're just going to have to make that call when the time comes. But, you know, the way we do it, we just every year look at it and say, here are the vehicles that are up for replacement. These we're going to hang on to. These we have to get rid of. And there have been times too where, you know, something goes wrong with something and we're supposed to get two more years out of it. And we decide we're going to just dump it now. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, yeah, I'm not the one who can make the sole decision, the unilateral decision on that at school. I take it with my capital budget to the trustees. And I mean, I just went to them last year. I had three vehicles that really needed to be replaced. And they told me no. You know, going into this COVID year, they said, you need to get at least another year, maybe two out of it. But we're not in a position now to replace vehicles. So you go and you add another year to the spreadsheet and bring it back a year later.
I would like to make a motion, seeing we now have a board, that we go with the consensus with everybody we talk to seems to be 5 years. Let's pick 5 years. We'll run the spreadsheet with 5 years. And if we have time between now and November 10th, where we want to run another one with 7 years, we can do that. But let's move on to the next subject and set 5 years. And if we want to run seven, we can do that after we finish the 5 years.
Yeah, but
I'd agree with you with one addition, John, and that is when we write up our recommendation, that it also include a lot of the context we're just now talking about, like some of the context that we've included tonight, that it's not just a number and say, here you go, that we offer it with the context.
I completely agree with that, Scott. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. I totally agree.
Then I think we're all then, well, I don't want to speak for others. Why don't, John, you offered that motion. Why don't I'll second it then.
Any discussion?
Yeah. All right. Well, let's.
No, I mean, I think you're right in that we have enough background information research to justify that decision. So I would support that.
All right. Sure. Well, let's make it official then. And unless there's any other discussion, let's call a vote. Hunter, well, I'll just go with you first.
Yeah, I'd vote aye for that for 5 years.
John Ricketson?
I'm an aye.
John Moore?
Aye.
Neil Lampson?
Aye.
And Scott Woodward is also an aye. All right, awesome, you guys. Great. I think we laid that to rest.
Yep.
I'm going to check off. You guys all good with me?
Yeah, thanks for all your help, Jim.
Do you know when you might do this again? Because I kind of don't mind being on.
Yeah, we'll do it again next Tuesday at 7 o'clock.
All right. Good enough. Have a good evening.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Well, we're about 10 minutes until time. Do you want to keep plugging along for another 10 minutes, or you want to call it a night?
Scott, I was going to ask if I could take 2 minutes of that 10, if no one would mind. And I didn't bring it up before the vote because I don't think it had any bearing on it. But it was kind of something in support of Hunter's analysis, and also I know Neil and I had exchanged a little bit of information through an email in the past week as well. And I just wanted to share this one spreadsheet that I had put together that I thought might be of interest, that's in this same topic, before we change topics. Would that be okay?
Yeah, I'll make you the host so you can do that.
I promise it'll be very brief.
I think I might have to do that now since you made
me the host. Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're the host. You got to pass the baton to him.
Yeah, so let's see.
I think, you know, there's a setting under security that just says share screen that'll let anybody share. I don't know if you have that or not.
Yeah, we do. Anyway,
however you want to do it.
I don't know if I can do it on the fly without having to restart the meeting.
So I'm not finding, Scott, you may have to share, because I'm not finding anything that allows me to.
Why don't you, well, actually, let me,
hold on a second. Okay, I got it.
I've been spending more time in Microsoft. Okay, there you go.
There you go, John.
Okay, can y'all see that?
Can you zoom in a little bit more?
Sure. Yeah, bump up that zoom size a little. That'd be great.
Okay. Yeah, that's better.
That's good.
Big enough? Okay. So these are the same numbers that Hunter had up on the screen as far as trade-in values go over the 7 years. Neil had actually given me the idea put the idea forward that we should also look at the fact that prices go up every year. So you kind of alluded to this, Hunter.
Mine wasn't this sophisticated.
So I don't know. I mean, and this number, we could play with it, by the way, whatever you want it to be. But we played with 3%, or I played with 3%. And then, so the thought was that we're kind of trading in, you know, and getting the same vehicle. That's the idea of this model.
Right.
After however many years, you can look at each row. And so as the trade-in value goes down, of course, the purchase price over time is also going up. And so I just took the difference between these two. So this is just, you know, growing by 3%. This is going down by these percentages. And then, so this would be the net cost to replace in any given year. And then I thought, and I don't know, I took a big leap because I don't know anything about reserves. But I said, well, if you're going to replace it after 4 years, you better be socking some money away each year to be able to do that. So all I did was took the net cost to replace, the difference between these two, divided it by the number of years after which we're replacing it. And that's how much you would have to be socking away each year if you were doing this out of your own checking account, right? To be able to then pay for it. So does that make sense so far? I go off the rails or?
No. It makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So like I said, I don't know a lot about reserves, so I may have made some crazy assumptions. But then I said, well, so what's the difference in how much we'd have to put away if we did it after 3 years, after 5 years, after 7 years? And so this is just the year over year difference of how much it would have had to be. And it was interesting because it, you know, after 4 years, doesn't really make much difference. A couple of grand difference a year in how much you would have had to be putting away each year to replace it. So I think it supports everything we've been saying. That kind of 5 to 7 years is a really good range. As far as reserves go, it doesn't make a huge difference because as you're, you know, I don't know why, it's just the way the numbers work. I think it's as the value of the vehicle's going down that 20% has less of an impact on it, right? Because it's 20% of a smaller number each year.
Right.
So that's all. I just wanted to share that. I don't think it changes anything other than it's just another way to look at it.
Yeah, that actually is like a second validation the way I would see it.
Yeah, that's a great analysis, John.
One thing is that, and we should save this for another meeting because it's going to be a more involved conversation, but I do think that when we get to the financing discussion, especially with a 5-year replacement cycle and your column there, John, around the additional annual reserves needed is with the replacement cycle that we're talking about, it really does beg a question, and I'm just going to plant a seed for future conversation, whether putting that money into whether debt service, you know, if it's a lease arrangement or simply a debt service, is fundamentally materially any different than socking away the money in a reserve fund. In other words, of course, you've got interest rates and stuff like that, and we can talk about different ways to finance, but I do think it's worth talking about when we get there, whether there is any fundamental difference between socking away that money in a reserve fund versus paying it out of operating, for example. I mean, what the heck's the difference, really? You can program these numbers into an operational budget line item just as easily as you can a reserve fund. In other words, with a 5-year replacement cycle, you're not really having to save up for that much.
Yeah, there'd probably be a bigger advantage if we were a business, but being in a municipality, I don't think it makes much of a difference. And and I think that in a lease scenario, at least in my opinion, I mean, in an ownership scenario, in my opinion, the time when you get the most value is when you can run it out beyond, you know, what a lease term would normally be,
right?
Or, you know, when it's paid off and then you're kind of just like getting the most value. But that's risky, especially with these pieces of equipment when we're so dependent on them and they can start falling apart. We know, we've heard people say after the warranty period. So,
right. Yeah. And the point again, just to try and emphasize it, is the shorter we keep a piece of equipment, the less argument there is to sock away money into a reserve fund. So I would kind of not necessarily get hung up on the quote word reserve as much as it is how we're ultimately going to finance it.
Funding needed, yeah.
Yeah, funding needed, yep.
And, you know, the point John was making about if in fact these are really lease purchase programs and you really own it at the end of the lease, then this would be an interesting number to compare to what those lease costs would be. It should be about the same.
It should be, yep, should be. And we're not going to, even if we can buy it at the end of 5 years, we probably won't.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, if you have a 5 year lease period on a truck and a 5 year lease period on a grader, it makes more sense on the grader, right? Because then if you can own it after 5 years for a dollar, you're still going to get another 15 years out of it, maybe, where the truck after 5 years, you're going to want to get rid of it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess that's the thing we ought to research on the truck. That there's no question in my mind from talking to Caterpillar and John Deere a year ago and listening to this guy at the town garage, that the lease on the heavy equipment is an interest rate of 3.75% a year. So you can figure out what your present value, future value is, and what the dollar is less money and all that. The main thing we have to do is we have to make sure that it's funded in the budget, whether it's a line item or in a reserve account, or whether it's funded through some other means to finance it. But we need to be upfront with what it costs to run this highway department. And I don't know, maybe the lease on the truck is a different deal where you don't own it at the end of the 5 or 7 years, but I don't know if you're clear on this, Scott, because you thought we wouldn't own the grader at the end of 7 years, and the answer is we do own it.
Yeah, no, I have no idea what the
truck is.
No, I have no idea what the arrangement is
on the trucks.
Yeah, I don't know that I said that. I really don't know what the situation is. Let me give I'll share. Well, I'll just read them. So in the last budget I could find for Woodstock, and this is what I want to run down. Their town accountant contacted me today, and I'll get the numbers from her. But what I thought what was interesting is, and I don't know if they're on a 5 year lease with their dump trucks or what their term is, but they are averaging just over $19,000 a year for each truck on their lease. And I think it'll be interesting to find out from Woodstock what their lease term is, because if they're paying 19 grand a year for a 5 year lease term for a comparable dump truck to what we're buying, and again, that's an assumption until I know more, that's a pretty interesting number when you juxtapose it against what John just put up on his spreadsheet.
Yeah, John, actually, could you put that spreadsheet back up for a second? I'm just curious about something.
I think what Woodstock is doing is they're taking the price of the new vehicle, which is $190,000, and they're getting a trade-in value of $50,000.
Uh-huh.
So that comes up with $140,000. Uh-huh. And they're financing that over a 5 or 7 year period, which is coming up with your payment. They're trading out a vehicle against a new one, and they're leasing that. They call it a lease, Scott, but it really isn't a lease. It's really a financing. It's not a true lease like what John was explaining is on a car lease, where you don't own it and have to buy it at the end for a fairly significant number. These leases are you buy them for a dollar at the end. So it's just a way of financing it. That's all it is.
Yeah, you very well might be right, John. I mean, just kind of back of the envelope math, would using our numbers would get us to about 25,000. So that's 6,000 off from Woodstock. So it's pretty close. It's in the ballpark.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks,
John. I just made the point. You made the point.
Whichever way we want to go is fine with me. We just run the numbers both ways, and the select board can go whichever way they want to go. But
I guess going back to my original point is, I don't, with a 5-year replacement cycle and the trade-in values we're talking about, and I don't really see a material difference between plugging this stuff in either as a reserve fund appropriation or an operating budget line item. And again, we can get into the weeds next time. I'm just kind of teeing up the conversation.
Good point. The one point that Jimmy made, getting back to your 5-year, 7-year, I don't want to go back to that again because we decided on 5. But Jimmy said that these bodies, the last 2 years, rust out a lot more than the first 5. So from a look, how the truck looks at the end of 5, it looks a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
So then can we use the same basic process on the loader and the grader and stuff that we just did on the trucks? If we come up with the right number of hours, can we just set it at that?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'd use 400 hours on the grader. Jimmy put 500 on it this last year. Art was putting on a lot less than that. I would figure 400 hours on the grader.
Mm-hmm.
Per year.
Yeah. I think last time we were talking around 350, so that's consistent.
Yeah.
And then the what did he say is on the, what's the year on the loader?
Say it was 13?
12, I think.
Hang on a second.
12, maybe?
I'll tell you. The loader is a 2015.
15, okay.
Okay, so in 5 years, there's, what did he say is the hours on the grader?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking at the wrong line. The loader is a 2010.
Okay, so that's 10 years old, and the number of hours on it, I think he said.
I wrote down, no, that's the grader.
6,000.
How much?
About 4,000.
4,000, right?
Yeah, I think that's what it was, yeah. So in 10 years, 4,000.
It's about 4,000. It's about 400 a year, too.
400 a year.
Yep.
And the excavator, I think, was, he said he couldn't estimate it because it depends
2,300 was what it wrote down for the excavator.
And that's, what year is that?
The excavator is, I think it's newer. No, it's not. The excavator? Oh, no. Is it
2008.
2008, yep.
Okay, so that's 12 years, 200. I'd say let's go 200 hours a year.
I think 200 a year is conservative. I think with the crew that we have now, they're going to be doing more ditch work than what we've done in the past. So I don't know how much more, but... I would envision that Jimmy would have the boys doing that quite a bit, especially when we get a 10-wheeler truck and they can make more progress with less trips, you know, with the bigger truck.
Would you go with 250 or 300?
Can I suggest that we pick this up next time and not to try and work through, unless you guys want to keep going?
I second the motion.
Perfect. We'll ask Jimmy some input on those. Yep.
Yeah, let's pick it up next time. But I think we made pretty good headway tonight. So.
Yep.
The other thing is like John and I have been trading spreadsheets along. We should just share all of those spreadsheet ideas with the whole committee here. There's no reason not to, like Hunter, yours, you should just send it to everybody.
Mine just came together moments before this meeting.
But, well, I understand that, and mine's been sitting around for a few days, and I just bounced it off of John because I needed to bounce it off somebody.
We should be able to email these to each other, right? There's no problem with that?
No, I can do that. No, that's fine.
Ethical standpoint or legal standpoint?
No, we only get into potential hot water if we're like kind of working on it in sort of a group way actively in between meetings, you know, like one or two people working on a spreadsheet and then sharing it with everybody else is totally fine.
Okay. Yeah. We should do that.
Well, yeah. I'll just leave it at that. Anyway, it's 8:39. So you guys want to call it a night?
Sounds good.
Great. All right.
Good.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Night.
We'll talk to you later. Good night. Good night.